Passage this morning will be 1 Corinthians 7. We'll be looking at verses 25 through 40. And since you know me so well, you're going to say, we're going to be here till 2 this afternoon or what? But it is all one concept, one subject that Paul wants to deal with. And as we've come across now concerning virgins, as it begins verse 25, that means this is a new topic that he's talking about. Verse 1, not concerning the things about which you wrote. So he does with that. And so this is the way that Paul takes us along as he goes, answering the questions that the Corinthians sent to him. So he first addresses the things that he's heard from those that came to him, and now he's addressing the questions that the Corinthians had. And they had some questions regarding those who have not yet married. And so he gives direction on that. I would like to read verses 25 through 40 so we kind of get the idea of the whole discussion that he has here. Verse 25. Now concerning virgins, I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who, by the mercy of the Lord, is trustworthy. I think then that this is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Are you released from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Yet such will have trouble in this life, and I'm trying to spare you. But this I say, brothers, the time has been shortened, so that from now on those who have wives should be as though they had none. And those who cry as though they did not cry. And those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. And those who buy as though they did not possess. And those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it. For the form of this world is passing away. But I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. And his interests have been divided. The woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Now this I say for your own benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote propriety and undistracted devotion to the Lord. But if any man thinks that he is acting unbecomingly toward his virgin daughter, if she is past her youth, and if it must be so, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin. Let her marry. But he who stands firm in his heart, being under no compulsion, but has authority over his own will, and has decided this in his own heart to keep his own virgin daughter, he will do well. So then both he who gives his own virgin daughter in marriage does well, and he who does not give her in marriage will do better. A wife is bound as long as her husband lives. But if her husband has fallen asleep, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But in my opinion, she is happier if she remains as she is. And I think that I also have the Spirit of God. So as you look at Paul's argument here, there's all sorts of stuff. People are going to be talking about marriage, remarriage, divorce. All that. Some of that stuff's in here. Paul's emphasis is found in verse 35. He says, what I want for you is I want something that's a benefit for you. They'll prosper you. And that is propriety and undistracted devotion to the Lord. Paul is looking for, no matter what your marital condition, that you would have undistracted devotion to the Lord. And as he'll point out, if you're not married, your spouse is one of those distractions. Now, she may be a good distraction. He may be a good distraction, but she's still a distraction. He or she is still a distraction. So Paul says, I want you to take this to heart, that no matter what situation you find yourself, remain in that situation because you can live for the Lord in that situation. The key is not changing your circumstances and primarily your marital status. That will not change you. Whatever you find yourself, wherever you find yourself, live for the Lord, undistracted. And he's going to throw in some other stuff in here too. It's like, what is weeping or crying and what is rejoicing and purchasing property have anything to do with marriage? It's the principle that he's trying to get across. So hold on, here we go. I'm going to give you a aspect so that when you're done, hopefully you'll understand what the forest looks like. If you want to look at the trees, have at it afterwards. I had this many notes, and now I'm back down to here. Then we'll back to here. So we'll see where we go this morning. Paul is going to say, if it is like this, and you have to ask, like what? He'll address that. If it's like this, it is better not to marry. So it is good to remain as you are. One of the reasons you do not marry is because you will be spared trouble in this life. Another reason that you would not marry is that you'd be free from concerns about the things of this world. Another reason not to marry is because, well, it's not sin not to marry, and it's not sin to marry, so don't worry about that. But when you think about marriage, you have to take into consideration that there's a very strong obligation, that you're under obligation to remain married until you die, till death do us part. And the last thing is, you'll be happier if you remain as you are, instead of looking for happiness in a change of circumstances. So let's look at this. Paul is addressing the virgins, those who have never been married, those who have never engaged in sexual intercourse. So those are the ones that are sexually pure. He uses it in the feminine. So he's talking about the virgin daughters here. And this is going to be a question that probably came from fathers regarding their virgin daughters. I have no command of the Lord, which means Jesus didn't teach on this subject and provide commands about what to do with your virgin daughters. Now, Jesus did cover the topic of marriage, and Paul will be alluding to this as he goes through it, in particular this topic. In Matthew 19, after Jesus gets done talking about marriage, what was the conclusion of the disciples? It is better not to marry. That's what Paul is trying to emphasize here. He's trying to emphasize the same thing that Jesus did. I want you to understand the obligation, the severity of marriage, and the commitment that's required. And if you can't commit to what's demanded of marriage, don't get married. Another thing Jesus talks about, he says in the days of Noah, the days of the Son of Man when he returns will be just like the days of Noah. What were they doing in the days of Noah? Eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage. So this is just the way you do life. You go through, you eat, you drink, you get married, you give in marriage. That's kind of what you do. So this is what the world says you do. And what happened? They were so caught up with marrying and giving in marriage that they missed out on the coming of the Son of Man. They weren't ready for it. And then Jesus uses another parable, and he actually talks about virgins in this one. 10 of them. And so being a virgin isn't going to qualify you for what? The afterlife, right? So only half of them, 5 of them, were looking forward to the Lord's return. The other ones were so caught up with living their life that they forgot to prepare for the Lord's return. And when the bridegroom came, only 5 went in because they were ready. The others were distracted with everything in the world such that they never made preparation for the return of their bridegroom. Very interesting. So who ultimately is our bridegroom? Jesus Christ is. So which marriage is more important to you? The one to your Savior or the one that is here on earth, a human? That's what Paul is trying to emphasize. And Jesus says at the end of that parable of the 10 virgins, therefore stay awake, for you don't know the day or the hour of the Lord's return. So although the Lord did broach the subject, he never offered commands. Paul says, I'm going to give commands as to what should be done. In fact, I'm just going to give you opinions. So you don't have to follow my opinion. That's what he's going to say. But he says, my viewpoint or my thinking on this matter comes from myself, whom the Lord, by his mercy, considers me trustworthy, that you could place your faith in what I say. So I think that since Paul is speaking this way, he's saying this would be a good thing to pay attention to and to heed his advice of what he gives. Verse 26, he starts with, I think then that this is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. So here the word for man is just a general one, a person. So I think it's good based upon the present distress that you remain as you are. In other words, remain in the condition in which God called you. So when Paul says, I think, there's a sense of tentativeness with what he says. So it's not a command, but it is definitely, this is what I've come up with in contemplating these things. It is good. And this word is used for the purpose of something. So it is good for a purpose. What is the purpose? Of undistracted devotion to the Lord. that you stay in the condition that you are in. And why is he giving this recommendation? That phrase, present distress. People go round and round and round on that, trying to figure out what it is. So let me give you some help with this. Let's just look at how those words are used. The word present means to be at hand or to be here. It is often used as the opposite of things to come. So things present, things to come. Think Romans, think later on in Corinthians when Paul uses that, or earlier on in 1 Corinthians 3. It's spoken of this present evil age. So that which is present has the idea of this age. I don't think Paul is referring to a specific event that's happening at Corinth. I think he's saying where we live now in this present age as opposed to the age to come, there is distress that is there. Now the word distress, unfortunately, is translated differently here than it is down in verse 37. In verse 37, I don't know what your translation says, but mine says compulsion. So the word distress in verse 26 is the same word as compulsion in verse 37. So I believe what Paul is saying is based upon this present age, and their compulsion regarding marriage, you need to watch what you're doing. You look at our society, and what is their view on marriage? We'll try it out. If it doesn't work, I'll get a divorce. You get married for love. What's love? I don't care. However you want to call it. In fact, they have bumper stickers that just say define it how you want. Love is love. What does that mean? Right? Is is. Okay, good. There we go. So there is a present compulsion in this society regarding marriage. In our country, and also as you see nationally and internationally, that compulsion is marriage is not important. Your vow is not important, what you gave. How you live inside your marriage is not important. It's easy to get out of it. That's the pressure. And there's also another pressure. Since we eat and drink and marry and give in marriage, it's something you do. So what happens when you turn 38? What happens when you turn 40 and aren't married yet? Everybody goes, oh, I'm so sorry for you, right? Here, let me hook you up with somebody that's dayless and desperate like you. I'm not dayless and desperate. Well, that's okay. The fact that you're not married means that you obviously need some help, right? So even well-meaning Christians come along and say, let us help you to get married, because that is the compulsion, that's the emphasis on the society. And Paul says, you have to look at marriage the way God has designed it. Why are you getting married? And even as a father who's responsible for his daughters, he cannot be led by compulsion of society to give his daughter away. Just because the guy can fog a mirror and shows up and asks you permission to marry your daughter doesn't mean you have to say yes. And what Paul's going to say is, this is where marriage needs to be instilled in your children from a young age. Not only will someday somebody want to marry your daughter, but someday your son is going to want to marry somebody else, and he better be of the quality that you would expect for your daughter. How many people get the advice and counsel before they get married? How many people are willing to go there and have a leader like Paul or a pastor or the scriptures say, no, do not marry this person? And even if they are a godly person, what Paul is saying here is your interest, your desire to please the Lord better dovetail with your spouse's. And so one of the things that you ask a young man that wants to date your daughter, and by the way, they should ask permission to date your daughter. If you're waiting until they ask permission to marry your daughter, it's too late. Your daughter's heart has probably already been gone. As a father, you guard your daughter's heart. You ask them, what does the Lord want to do in your life? How does he want to use you? What do you envision God doing with you? What is his plan for your life? If they go, see ya. They should have a well-defined, this is how God's leading me, this is where I want him. Well, I know my daughter, and God's leading her, and you two aren't lining up. You're both spiritual, that's good, but you're not going to work together. You're going to have problems because God's leading you separate ways. What God does is he leads the two together and they find that he has the aspect, this is how God is leading me. She has the aspect, I can help him. Because I saw in Genesis 1 and 2 that God created the woman as the helper and God said it is good and I believe it is good. You ask the son, the man that's coming to ask your daughter's hand in marriage. So, why do you love my daughter? If he hesitates, see ya. If it's because she knows how to cook and clean, see ya. What is it about her? Is there an affinity for her heart for the Lord? See, we don't do that because society says that's not important. And so there's this present compulsion that throw everything out and just get married. Get married and everything will work out. It doesn't. Paul says so. When you get married, what are you going to get? You'll have troubles in this life, in this present age. Everybody that's married here today can say amen to that. There are troubles. Two separate personalities. But what makes it work? We're united on following the Lord. So he says, because of the present pressure, the distress, it has the idea of a necessity or constraint, people feel like they need to get married. And Paul says, it's good if you just stay right where you're at. Don't let society dictate whether you should get married or not. And yes, it could be distress, but I don't think that word fits here based upon the context. And Paul is going to go on and he's going to say, therefore, so if you're going to remain as you are, then are you bound to a wife? And this is another aspect of where the constraint comes from. The word bound, I mean, what a way to say it. The word bound has mean confined or restrained. Are you restrained by your wife? What would the world say? Get rid of her, right? No. The aspect of bound here comes from Romans 7 verse 2. For the married woman has been bound by law to her husband. So that means there is an obligation before God to fulfill your vows to your spouse. You are bound by your word. And again, I'll point out in Mark 5, where he talks about marriage divorce, what's the very next topic that he brings up? Keeping your vows. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. And I'll say it. If you marry or think about marrying a divorced person, you got to ask yourself, if they didn't keep their word to their former spouse, why in the world do you think they'll keep their word to you? That's a character flaw. Oops. Okay. I'll just go on. I'll look down while I preach today. This will be good. No, this is the things that you talk about. And this is the thing where fathers need to be fathers. And that's why Paul will deal with fathers here. If you look at original creation, what are women prone to? Deception. And therefore, they're easily led astray. You need to make sure that the one wanting to marry your daughter is not deceiving her or you. And there's questions you can ask to find out. So if you're bound to a wife, in other words, you've made that obligation, you've given your word, do not seek to be released. This word bound and released is used in another verse. It's when Jesus sends the disciples to go get the donkey that's tied up, release it and bring it to me. So it has the idea of it's tied up, you need to loose it so it can be free. And are you released from a wife? Don't seek a wife. Now, why would he say that you're released from a wife? Based on context, there's only one reason Paul's given in this context why you'd be released from your spouse. And what is it? They're an unbeliever who leaves you. And then verse 28, notice he goes on. But if you marry... So this is true. If you were married to an unbeliever, the unbeliever divorced you and left, verse 28 does say you can get married. But Paul also points out earlier that you are also being called as a minister of reconciliation to try to reconcile the original marriage as well as reconcile your unbelieving spouse to the Lord. So if you marry, you have not sinned. You have to look at the context as to who he's talking about in verse 28. Then he says, and if a virgin marries, so somebody hasn't been married yet. If she marries, she has not sinned. So Paul's not saying this is an issue of disobeying a commandment. This is not a sin if you do get married. But what is he doing? I'm trying to spare you from trouble. The word trouble is your word for affliction, tribulation. Yet such, the ones who get married, will have trouble. You'll have tribulation. You'll have, the word means pressure. In this life, why does he say in this life? Because death concludes the marriage, as shown in verse 39. So you will have troubles. And as you deal with that trouble and that tribulation and the difficulties and the strains with one another, you will find that you are distracted from being fully devoted to the things of the Lord. And Paul's saying, I'm just trying to spare you from that. So every marriage will have trouble. And that trouble can distract you from being fully devoted to the Lord. Paul continues in verse 29. But this I say, brothers, the time has been shortened. So that from now on, those who have wives should be as though they had none. And those who cry as though they did not cry. And those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. And those who buy as though they did not possess. It's important to go to verse 31. And those who use this world as though they did not make full use of it. For the form of this world is passing away. So you look at verse 29, take it with verse 31. He says the time has been shortened, which means what? The time for this world is coming to an end. The world will pass away. So there's this sense of urgency that's upon us. So this time has been shortened. Every morning that you wake up, the time has been shortened one more day as to when this world will come to an end and the Lord creates a new heavens and new earth. And so there's a limited time on which you can live for the Lord here on this earth. And therefore, he says, we need to act as that way, in that way. So that if you are married, you should act as though you aren't married. Now, be careful with this one. It has the idea of you need to act as though you are single-minded. So hopefully your spouse is single-minded with you and you can do things together. But you need to choose the Lord over your spouse if it comes to shove. You choose the Lord. Stephen read an excellent parallel passage. What chapter was that? 16. So Jeremiah is told not to go to a place of feasting and not to go to a place of mourning. And that's what you have here. What Paul is saying is sometimes things happen in your life that makes you cry, right? But you can't allow that to define the rest of your life. You need to be able to weep, to mourn, and to get up and continue to follow the Lord. You can't use an event that was sorrowful or negatively impactful in your life to say, I'm not going to live for the Lord anymore because of it. And the things that bring you joy, they better not be your attention such that I am a pleasure seeker now, such that I can't afford to follow the Lord anymore. I need pleasure. I can't afford time with him, with his people, with anything. I am all out for pleasure. And Paul says, you need to act like there are no pleasures other than him. And for those who buy, this world is all about having and boasting about what you have. 1 John 2:15 through 17. And by the way, that passage ends with, and the world is passing away. So the lust of the eyes, the boastful pride of life, all the things that you want and then you boast about when you have them. He says, by all means, use the world, but don't make full use of the world. And he's going to explain that in just a second here. You'll notice Paul, when he writes the last part, as those who buy, as though they did not possess, you would think that he would say as those that did not buy. Because he said, as those that cry as though they don't cry, those who rejoice as not rejoicing. Those who buy, you think of say, as those who don't buy. But what Paul is saying here is he's calling attention to what he's going to say in verse 31, which is you don't buy things to make them your possession. You buy them to use them for the Lord. You use the world, all that is in the world, the Lord has made. And it's meant to be used. God's given it to us as stewards of the resources that he's given to us. But don't make full use of it. In other words, there's times in life, in order to serve the Lord, you're going to have to say no to things of the world. You're going to have to say, no, I can't do that because to be devoted to the Lord in this area, I need to do this. I don't have time for that. In Hebrews 12, the author says, lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily entangles us, which means there are weights in our life that are not sinful, but we need to lay them aside. Yes, there are sins, they tangle us, they trip us up, but there are things in this life that just simply weigh us down. Solomon mentions some of them when talking about possessions. What do you have when you have a lot of possessions? You have to have a lot of people take care of them. The more possessions you have, the more work it is. And pretty soon, the possession owns you instead of you owning the possession. You that own houses, how much maintenance do you have still yet to do on your house before wintertime comes? How much do you need to get done? Isn't your house always saying, hey, over here, yo, in case that wasn't enough here, I sprung a leak over here. Oh, by the way, this is rotting over here. Oh, by the way, bugs are coming in over here. Oh, by the way, what is it? It's just constant. But are you using the resources for the Lord? That's why we acquire them, to use them for the Lord. And Paul will tell us how they're used, verse 32. But I want you to be free of concern. Here the word concern means free from care. And as you look at Matthew 6, it's the word worried or worry. Do not worry then, saying, what will we eat? What is that? That's something of the world. Do not worry saying, what will we drink? Do not worry saying, what will we wear for clothing? And so the aspect of being concerned is when you're married, you have to be concerned about feeding your spouse, making sure they have food, make sure they have clothing, right? Whereas if you're single, if it's time to eat, I'll eat. If there's not, there's not. You don't worry about that. If you have a wife, you need to provide for her. Clothing, food, covering, a house. That takes using the world for her sake, but you don't take full use of the world. And so Paul says, if you're married, that's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to try to figure out how to balance using the world without actually having it use you, being enslaved to it. Luke 10. And Martha had a sister called Mary, who was also seated at the Lord's feet, listening to his word. But Martha was distracted, a word we'll see later on, with all her preparations, and she came up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the preparations? Then tell her to help me. But the Lord answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are concerned, worried, and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary. For Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. Martha, you're so worried about all the things of the world, making sure everything looks right, everything's perfect, that all the settings are perfect. You've missed out on sitting at my feet and listening to me. There's a study that came out of the University of Michigan, and it says that when a man gets married, his wife then, on average, acquires an additional 7 hours of housework a week. And the man is freed of 1 hour of housework a week when he gets married. You know what was surprising to me? That any men do more than 1 hour of housework a week. But that shows you there's more that you have to do. You have to clean up after people, do things. It's like having kids, right? Except this one's a little bit older. And so how do you deal with that? That's going to take part of your time. Can you say no to some of these things? And the Lord, in the book of Amos speaking to the leaders of the land, Saying the reason you don't have time for the Lord is because your wives are a bunch of cows. I'm sorry, that's what he says. They're the cows of Bashan. They sit around and say, honey, I want this, go get it. And so you go, you rob, you steal, you do everything else. Why? Because your wife is driving you to make full use of the world instead of to pursue the Lord. And that's why a married couple, you work together and you say, you know what? What's more important? It's serving the Lord. That's why your service needs to dovetail together. My wife is an excellent cook. There's times when she will be ministering to others and she won't make it home in time to cook. What do I do? I can either complain or I can say, you know what? Her ministry that we've agreed on is important. And so guess what? We're going out tonight. Or we're going through the drive-thru or whatever, or we'll just eat next to nothing. Why is that? You give up on your full use of the world because something else is more important. And so Paul says that, I want you to be free from concern, from worry. And one who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. So he's concerned or worried in a good way, right? So. Worried about the things that the Lord has given to him, that have been provided by the Lord, and how to use them for the Lord. How can I please the Lord with what he's given to me? And by the way, one of the things the Lord gives to you is a spouse. So you should be concerned about how you use your spouse for the Lord. Verse 33, but the one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. So it doesn't mean that they're worldly. It just means your spouse takes upkeep. Right? They need to eat, they need to drink, they need clothes. And so you're going to be concerned about the things of the world. I'm very good on Amazon. What do you need, honey? Okay, I'll find it, right? Because things need to run. When my parents were staying with us, I told her, whatever you need, Maureen, whatever you need, you have it for taking care of my parents. That was an open-ended invitation. She could have taken advantage of it. But she just very shyly said, well, this would be nice. Boom, she had it. Because ministering to my parents was ministering to the Lord. So it's available to you. That was agreed upon. That's what we do. We do it together. And that takes the things of the world. So you have to be able to get the things of the world to be able to take care of your spouse. And then verse 34, and he's divided. So I've got the things of the world that are necessary for my spouse, and I've got the things of the Lord that are necessary for the Lord. And sometimes they come into conflict, and sometimes there's a division in yourself, in your own mind, as to what is most important. And so there is a division or separated in parts. You want those to be together. But as Paul says, they're not always going to be together. Then verse 34, the woman who is unmarried. And the virgin, so the woman who is unmarried is either a widow or her spouse, unbelieving spouse has left her. Then he says, and the virgin, so the one who has never been married, is concerned about the things of the Lord, so they don't have a husband. And what are the things of the Lord that are important to her? She wants to be holy in her body. In other words, no sexual immorality is probably what's being referred to here. And also in spirit. So in the material realm and also in the immaterial realm, everything she has, she wants to be dedicated to the service of the Lord. That's what holy means. So I want to be all out for the Lord. I want to be a servant for him. Then Paul goes on, but the one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. You know, he needs this, he needs that, he needs the other thing. I need to figure out how to do this, how to make the household run, all those things. You're concerned about those things. Then verse 35, Paul says, now I say this for your benefit. The word for benefit is word that is used for profit. This is beneficial for you. This is advantageous for you. So what I want for you is to be free to serve the Lord wholeheartedly. And if marriage, in particular the way that society defines marriage, is going to hinder you, I don't want you to partake of it. And then he says something interesting. Not to put a restraint upon you. The literal translation is not to throw a noose over you. I'm not trying to say that serving the Lord wholeheartedly is like being hung. Woe is me. I have to serve the Lord. I can't be married. I can't have a wife. I can't have a husband. Woe is me. This is what I have to do. I have to be spiritual. Paul says, that's not what I'm doing. There is a benefit. There is a payment. There's a reward for doing this. And I want you to receive that payment that comes with serving the Lord, the reward that is there. I'm not trying to kill you, is what he's saying. I'm trying to promote. My purpose is for propriety and undistracted devotion. Propriety is the good outward appearance, which means that somebody that serves the Lord is very attractive. Interesting. So what do you like about my daughter? Oh, she's beautiful. In what way do you mean beautiful? She serves the Lord. Good answer. Is that beautiful to you? It should be beautiful to you. Those are the questions that fathers have with potential suitors. A good outward appearance. Presentable. 1 Corinthians 12:24. The more presentable members, those that are seen in public. Undistracted. In other words, no distraction. Again, Martha was distracted with what? All these things that are going on. And she didn't have time to just sit at Jesus' feet and listen to him. And then the word devotion. Great word here. It's a bunch of Greek words put together. Good. Sitting beside. The one that is sitting beside is the idea of one who is in constant attendance to the person that they're next to. So you're seated beside them. You're waiting to do whatever that person that you're responsible to attend to would have done. And then Paul puts the word good in front of that. So this devotion is that you see that it is good to be free to be the Lord's servant, his attendant. That when he says go, you can go. When he says stay, you can stay. When he says do this, you do that. That's the aspect of devotion. You're waiting to just hear what your loved one says to you and you want to do it. And so in this section here, Paul is telling us that we have a limited amount of time to please the Lord and we are called to make the most of it. Most likely you can do that by being single, but you can also do that being married. That's what Paul's saying here. I'm not giving you a command that you can't get married. He's saying, use the world, but don't make full use of this world. There's things that you may want to do, you've longed about, but you're like, I just don't have time to do that because I'm devoted to do this for the Lord. I got to do this. Your worldly demands upon your spouse will negatively impact his or her devotion to the Lord. So let me say that one again to you that are married. Your worldly demands upon your spouse will negatively impact his or her devotion to the Lord. So stick to what your needs are and reel in your wants. In other words, stick to using the world, but not making full use of the world. But that would only make sense if you're serving the Lord. Otherwise, why not do what we can do? There's no conflict because you have to have that conflict, which would be there, which is you can't serve two masters. So you got to choose the one that's more important. A believer who is pursuing eternal things will not have time to make full use of the world. All things are lawful for me, Paul says, but not all things are profitable. So I can do everything that's in the world. God's created all things. Good. When they're done according to the way that he would have you to use them, they're good. But he says not all things are profitable. What's more important, that you please the Lord or that you please your spouse? We are called to be undistracted servants of the Lord. Now verses 36 through 38. This is written to the fathers. I'm simply going to say, A father is responsible for whether his daughter marries or not. I do not believe that has changed. Our society says no way. If you want to marry somebody, your father doesn't agree, then just elope. You're wrong. That is the responsibility of your father to help you in finding the right spouse. Which means, fathers, you need to raise your daughter such that they look to you and trust you in your decision making. If any man thinks that he is acting unbecomingly towards his virgin daughter, so acting unbecomingly is behaving disgracefully, indecently. He's not doing what's right. 1 Corinthians 13:5, love does not act unbecomingly. So am I loving my daughter and what I'm doing? If she is past her youth, okay, so this is probably a reference to childbearing years, and it must be so. Why would it be so? I believe that it's going to be all the way back to 1 Corinthians 7, verse 7, where each man has his own gift from God, one this way and another. In other words, one is singleness and one is marriage. You may look at your daughter and realize she's not designed to be single. God's gifting for her is to be a wife. And so if you think that you're acting unbecomingly by not giving her away, if she's past her youth, you know, all these things are societal pressures, are they not? Yes, they are. And if it must be so, then let him do what he wishes. He does not sin. Let her marry. So you're not sinning by keeping your daughter and saying you have to serve the Lord the rest of your life. You're going to be single. I'm going to send you as a missionary to some far-off country and never see you again. No, the whole aspect of they're in your household, they're under your care, you're watching and you're helping them, and you realize that this is going to be what's best for them because God has not called them to singleness. He's called them to marriage. Now, verse 37, that doesn't mean that anybody that comes along, you send your daughter off to get married to. But he who stands firm in his heart, being under no compulsion. So where is the conviction coming from? So here's your word compulsion, which is the word distress used earlier on. Present distress. It has the idea of there's pressure, there's necessity, there's constraint. So you're under no constraint, no societal constraint. You feel no pressure. You don't care what the world says about whether your daughter should be married or not and what people think if she's not married. So if you stand firm in your heart, which means the conviction is coming from inside, not outside, and you have authority over your own will. In other words, you're not being manipulated by the pressures of society. You're not being manipulated by your daughter. And you have decided in your own heart, once again, it's not external. That's Paul's emphasis here. If you keep your own daughter, in other words, you say, I am going to be the provider for her here on out. He says you do well. So you have to make your decision not based upon what society says, but based upon what you believe God has for your daughter. And that's why you train up a child in the way that God has for them. You have to know your children. Each one individually, God has a special gifting and use for them. And you have to know whether it's singleness or marriage that he has for them. And you help them in that. So verse 37, if you realize, or verse 36, if she's getting to that age, she's time to marry, let her marry. You don't sin by doing that. And all of this is because you are under conviction. And if that conviction is that your daughter should remain with you, you do well. And Paul summarizes in verse 38. So then both he who gives his own virgin daughter in marriage does well, and he who does not give her in marriage will do better. And why? Because you can have undistracted devotion to the Lord when you're single, whereas there will be some trials when you're married. And so what does a father need to do? He needs to make sure that if she is not called to singleness, that he helps her find a husband where their calling, God's calling for them, dovetails together such that they would be a great match together in serving the Lord. Not that they have the same likes and same desires and same lusts. No, but that they would serve the Lord hand in hand. That's what you're looking for. This is a great thing for those that think they need to find a spouse. See, the marriages were arranged way back in the Old Testament. But you'll notice here that it's the aspect of the father and the daughter are talking about this, and he's the one that's evaluating whether the suitor is suitable for his daughter or not. So men, do your job as fathers. Know your daughters. Know his calling on her life. Help your daughter in making good decisions regarding marriage. And train your daughter to trust you by showing yourself trustworthy, that you do have not your own desire at heart, but your daughter's desire at heart, such that she will willingly submit to your evaluation of somebody that she might want to date. And from a pastoral standpoint, I don't speak as the command of the Lord. Don't wait until your daughter asks, until some guy asks permission to marry your daughter. Get it back to where he asked permission to date your daughter. Protect her heart. One pastor spoke of his daughter. He had to tell her, no, you are not marrying that guy. And he says, what I had to decide is that it was better for my daughter to cry for a night than it was for her to cry for a lifetime. In other words, he chose to love the Lord instead of love his daughter. And he was actually loving his daughter. Do not allow societal pressure to persuade you as to when or if your daughter should marry. And you that are raising young boys, they need to realize they need to go talk to that girl's father. The earlier, the better. They need to be able to go there and express themselves in what they're pursuing and why they're pursuing it. And why they would want to date and ask permission to do so. And I know you can write me off as being old-fashioned. I think Paul has given us great advice here. That's a father's responsibility, to care for his children. And so if you don't give her in marriage, you will do better than, I believe, verse 39 is an explanation of why. Because marriage is a long-term commitment. A wife is bound to her husband as long as they both shall live. Matthew 19, the disciples realized that and said, well, how'd that whole conversation start with Jesus in Matthew 19? What was the first question they asked him? Can a man divorce his wife for any old reason? So that was society's view on marriage. And what did Jesus do? He brought them back to Genesis and took them out of Deuteronomy. And they said, well, Moses commanded us to get a divorce. And he said, he did not. He permitted it. And you know why he permitted it? Because of the hardness of your heart. So let's go look at the original design. And when they're all done, they're going, wow, if you look at the original design, that's like for life. And that's a commitment. And wow, I don't think you should get married. And Jesus says, you know what? To some that's given. If you can't uphold God's standard of marriage, then don't get married. That's what Jesus says. He talks about eunuchs. He says some are born that way, some are made that way, but some choose to be that way. In other words, to devote themselves to not being married in order to pursue the Lord, undistracted. But if a husband has fallen asleep, that doesn't mean he's sitting in front of the TV at nighttime. It means he's actually died. Then she is free to be married. She's a widow at that time. She's free to be married to whomever she wishes. So no longer is she under the authority of her father. She has been married, so she can make the decision herself who she marries. But Paul says, only in the Lord. Now, it's really easy to just say this means only to believers. I believe it goes beyond that. Yes, it does mean to believers only. But Paul's been speaking about the things of the Lord and pleasing the Lord. So only if it is the Lord's will, in other words, you find that your pursuit of the Lord lines up with this other guy's This guy's pursuit of the Lord, and therefore it would make a good match as you pursue the Lord together. So yes, by all means, you only marry believers. But I think sometimes that's the low criteria. No, they need to be pursuing the Lord the same way. And that you can see that you're joined together for that reason. Again, the joining together has the idea of you're taking two animals, putting them in a yoke, hitching them up for what reason? To plow the field. Do you believe the Lord wants you to plow this field? No, I think he wants me to plow the field over there. Well, that means every time we go out to work, I'm going to go this way and you're going to try to go that way. We're in a yoke and we're not going to get anything done. We need to be united to be able to move that plow. And again, I'll use one of my favorite illustrations. When I saw it at the Evergreen State Fair, they have the big old Clydesdale, the draft horses. So they'll have polling contests, and you go watch those. And so this little guy's sitting on a little buggy behind it, and they have weight that moves forward as the two draft horses move to pull it. And this one guy sat there, and he was getting ready to go, and all of a sudden they both started going, but they were doing their own thing. And it was just like everybody is aghast. They're going to hurt themselves. And the guy did whatever he did just to calm them down, and the horses calmed down. And then when he hit the reins like he wanted to, boom, they hit that, and that sled went, and off they went. But when they were not in agreement and they were just trying to do whatever they want, they were going to hurt each other, and they would hurt not only themselves but the other one. But when they were in tune with the one that had brought them together and knew where he was going and said go, and they went, man, a lot of stuff could be done. And that's what you want your marriage to be. Serving the Lord wholeheartedly, one by one, not serving the world, using the world, but not making full use of the world. And then Paul concludes by saying, in my opinion, she, so the one that is unmarried, is happier if she remains as she is. She'll be blessed. That's your word for blessed. And why will she be blessed? For being single? No. Because she's pursuing the Lord undistracted. That's why you have to have the whole context. That's why I couldn't just take part of this here. There is not a blessing just to being single. The blessing is being able to pursue the Lord undistracted. And he says, and I think that I also have the Spirit of God. So what Paul is saying is, this is just not some weirdo's advice. This is actually a man of God giving you advice. Which tells you also that you should seek spiritual advice relative to marriage, as well as your father's advice relative to marriage. God has given us help in choosing a spouse. You don't have to flip a coin. You want people that have wisdom, discernment, and can point you towards. They know you well enough that they can help you decide whether that would work out or not. We know a couple that was going to get married, and so they went to a guy that's pretty good at helping people decide whether they should get married or not. He's a counselor in that regard. One of the things he does on the side, walked them through it. And when they were done, they said, we shouldn't be getting married. And they saw that it wouldn't work. And you should be okay with that. My final statement, and yes, we will complete on time. That's good. There is joy in serving the Lord with undistracted devotion. And no, it is not a hangman's noose. Serving the Lord is not like somebody threw a noose around your neck. He is my exceedingly great joy. I delight in him, and I delight being the one that sits as his attendant, ready to do whatever he would have me to do. For those of you that are married, may you find that with your spouse, that you both sit there together and can't wait to serve the Lord together. If you're single, I hope that's your calling too. If you're just worried about being married and have no idea about whether you're going to pursue the Lord or not, just don't get married. You'll make your life and your spouse's life miserable. Marriage is designed to bring two people together, put them in the same yoke so that they can serve the Lord side by side. And yes, it is also so for unbelievers. but they will never experience the full blessing that God has for marriage unless they know him. So there's your marital advice. You can throw rocks and things at me later on, but I want you to at least know what God's word says. And now you can go back and look at it in detail. We've looked at the forest. You can go look at the trees. Paul's not really talking about marriage, is he? What's he talking about? Undevoted or undistracted devotion to the Lord. So let's not talk about marriage for a second. Let me just ask you a question. Are you devoted to the Lord? Are you willing to do away with distractions so you can be fully committed to him? And now I have to do the caveat. That doesn't mean getting rid of your spouse who is a distraction. Are you willing to pursue the Lord wholeheartedly, and is that your goal? Society says you need to get married, you need to have kids, and therefore you will have fulfilled the American dream. And from what I see with the statistics that are out there, it's not the American dream anymore. It's the American nightmare. Because when you take God and his word and throw it out, that's what you get. So let us be ones who model well marriage, who model well singleness, because we are modeling our devotion to the Lord, and may people see that and be drawn to him because of it. Let's pray. Father, we thank you that you do not leave us clueless. You give us instruction. You give us guidance. We thank you for that. We thank you that your word does provide a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path so we know how to go forward. Lord, this world is very appealing. It's the lust of the eyes and the lust of everything else that we have, the five senses, the boastful pride of life. Help us, Lord, to be willing to say no to the full use of this world so that we might be devoted to you. Help us to use this world, the resources that you put at our disposal as stewards, use them for you, acquire them for you, and not just for selfish desires. Thank you for the delight you put in our hearts when we serve you. Thank you for the joy it is to sit at your feet, undistracted, and to learn from you. Thank you, Lord, that you have taken your son and put us in the same yoke with him. And he's gentle and lowly, and we learn from him. May that example spill over into our marriages too. We ask this in your son's blessed name. Amen.